You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Blue White Breakdown. The premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live. Here are your hosts, Bob Flounders and Johnny McGonigal.
Johnny McGonigal, we're back on a Thursday for the Blue White Breakdown. We haven't done many Thursdays. I'm trying to think. It's probably a short list. Usually we're in and out Tuesday or Wednesday. But it was a busy. We had a trip up to State College to talk to James, Andy Kotelnicki, a couple of players. So we kind of pushed it back a little, Johnny. We also were at Pro Day last Friday in State College, which was early, but mercifully it was over by around lunchtime. So I think if they want to start it, Johnny, next year at 6 a.m., I'll just go get a room up there and I could be on my merry way by like 10 o'clock in the morning. I'd be great with it. How about you?
I was going to say, would you wake up at like 3 a.m. and leave from Harrisburg at that point?
No, I would make them put me in a hotel room.
Well, you know what? I'm sure the hotel rates in March are a little bit different than they are in September, October, and November.
Yeah. So
I think the Penn Live overlords would take to that more kindly.
Johnny, I think let's just start with the availability, the Tuesday availability. A little late Tuesday night, but very appreciative of James Franklin for opening up practice, talking to us, making his new offensive coordinator available, along with it was Sal Wormley, Kobe King, and Devon Ellis. Very appreciative of that. Let's not sugarcoat it, Johnny. I think everyone is so curious about the offense, given the nightmarish performance last year when it mattered against Ohio State and Michigan. James Franklin has clearly moved on from Mike Yurcich. I don't know that he'll ever, Johnny, even mention him by name again. The fact that he fired him the day after the Michigan game. But it's just funny to see him kind of reference last year. And he's got no problems mentioning Manny Diaz and all he's done for Penn State. And he talked about the impact of the new coordinators on Tuesday night. But I know you got to absorb quite a bit from Andy. And fascinating hire. It's a fascinating offseason. 12-team playoff. You know, I think Penn State fans expect, well, this is the year we're going to be in the playoffs. We got a creative guy to upgrade our offense. Certainly plenty of talent, even though they lost some talent. Plenty of talent coming back. Two very talented quarterbacks, two very talented running backs, a go-to guy at tight end, some depth along the offensive line. So since you spent, I think you had Kotelnicki for about 15 minutes, what stood out to you about him? I know you've written about him. You're going to continue to write about him. But what stood out to you about some of the things he said, and did it kind of carry over from his introductory press conference about what he wanted to do?
Yeah, Bob, real quick to touch on what you referenced kind of at the top there with, you know, not mentioning Mike Yurcich. So that stems from a question that James was asked about basically the process of replacing three coordinators in spring camp, how it's going, all that kind of stuff. And James, you know, he left some names out, but he was saying, yeah, look, it's difficult to replace a Brent Pry. It's difficult to replace, you know, a Manny Diaz. He did not say it's difficult to replace a Mike Yurcich. So the guy who is replacing Mike Yurcich, though, is Andy Kotelnicki. And like you mentioned, you know, we were able to speak to him on Tuesday night after James Franklin talked to everyone. They brought Andy out, and then they brought a handful of players out. And I know you got some good stuff from them. And I just stayed at Andy because I'm like, hey, when's the next time we're going to be able to speak to the offensive coordinator? Who knows? And so... Yeah, he's just a my impressions of him, by the way, just in practice, is that he's a very energetic, intense, you know, kind of no BS kind of guy. I mean, he had the quarterbacks going through ball security drills in both you know, practice windows that we saw, and that's something that maybe we just didn't see last year because it happened at a different time in practice, but it seems new. He's very tuned in, and he's been on campus now since December. You know, when he was hired, he was hanging around the Lash building, you know, even in an unofficial capacity by that point. And has gotten to know Drew Aller a lot over this time, has gotten to know his roster. And I know that I've written two things I've already published off of Andy. One thing is coming this weekend. I want to start, though, with the wide receivers and then go from there, because that's kind of what stood out to me most from what Andy said. You know, he was asked about the wide receivers, a group that was under scrutiny last year for, you know, struggling at times, let's say. But Andy was really, you know, he was praising them. He said that, look, I think this group is going to surprise some people. He really talked to their demeanor and said that, you know, he said, I think they're progressing really, really well right now. I'm very pleased with that group, position that's going to surprise some people. And then he said, you know, they're wearing a chip on their shoulder. Everyone's going to point the finger at them, right or wrong. That's what it is. It's a we'll show you. I believe they have a chip on their shoulder and they'll surprise people. And so, you know, look, the wide receiver room, frankly, you know, was a part of a disappointing offense when it mattered most last year. You look at the, you know, Keandre Lambert-Smith, you know, kind of fading down the stretch, disappearing with what, two catches in his final four games. Harrison Wallace with the injury issues never really got going. The development of the second tier guys never really came into focus. Dante Cephas, who transferred out. We've talked about him and how he was kind of a, you know, an underwhelming transfer addition after coming in with a lot of hype. And so it's a room that you add Julian Fleming now, and you have this group of guys that endured last season and has to grow from it. I do think it's, I mean, what's Andy going to say, you know, that these guys are terrible? Like, he's not going to say that, obviously, but he could have said, You know what? Like, I want to challenge these guys, and I'm not, you know, I'm not seeing it right now, but he's been impressed with them. And I think the one quote that honestly stood out the most, maybe the quote of the offseason so far, Bob, it's early, but, you know, he said the wide receivers have been, you know, committed themselves to improving daily. We've challenged them physically and mentally more than they have been, and they've responded well. Not sure if that was a subtle, like, hey, the last guy wasn't, you know, really, you know, pushing these guys or what, or maybe he's just speaking to, you know, what they've done so far. But yeah, some interesting stuff on Andy on a wide receiver room that we know is under the microscope right now and going into the 2024 season.
Yeah, I think as the offseason progresses, Johnny, you and I are going to be, it won't just be Andy. It'll be probably James more than Andy, but I'm going to be looking for how many times. All right, he just said forever. It just felt like the whole 2023 offseason going into the whole 2023 regular season, it was the same refrain, looking, still waiting for some guys to emerge, right? And that, to me, like, you know, I think I was stupid enough to look at that. Well, he's trying to encourage everybody. He knows what he's got, and he doesn't want to mentally, like, you know, deflate some guys. But the other side of the coin was he could have been telling the brutal truth that no one had emerged. And it kind of looked that way, I think, last year. I don't think Mike Yurcich necessarily orchestrated the offense enough to maybe get some players on the field and just utilizing maybe their specific strengths. But we'll see what Andy is going to do. But I mentioned at the top, Johnny, that I think this is what the Penn State fans want to know. What have we learned about the offense? What have we learned about the Noah OC? But I also think the other thing the fans, I think they really want to know is, what kind of vision does Andy maybe have for a talent like Bo Prabula, who is so unique? And I think they were able to show last time, there's room in an offense for those two guys to be involved. Be against every team, even if they're on the field at the same time. When they were on the field at the same time last year, though, Johnny, it was pretty obvious that, you know, they didn't. I mean, you knew that If Bo was in the game, chances are he was going to get the ball. They didn't really camouflage things. I think this guy, I'm hoping this guy can be a little bit more creative, a little bit more varied. And I think the fans really, really are curious, not only with him, but with James, where Bo Prabhula stands, maybe at the end of spring drills. I think you and I both agree that it would take a, it would really be stunning if Drew wasn't the guy, but stranger things have happened. But I do think there's a world in which Prabhula has to have his role expanded, and Andy might be the guy to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if there's going to be someone who's the guy, it's going to be Andy Kotelnicki. You look at what he's done in his past, both at Kansas and Buffalo, and he's used not only two quarterback sets, but there's a clip out there. I actually included it in the story that I wrote about Bo that's up online. I think it went up this morning, Thursday morning. It's like a two quarterback reverse boot pass. And if that sounds confusing, just watch it. It's like poetry in motion. It's incredible. And that's the kind of, those are the kind of plays. Those are the kind of sets. Those are the kind of wrinkles, along with just a normal, like your normal base offense. It's an explosive offense by itself. But those are the kind of wrinkles and different things that Andy Kotelnicki brings to the table that I think last year, Penn State's offense in more than one area lacked ingenuity, creativity, explosiveness for sure. And I think that's what he brings to the table. And so you look at what Bo Prabhula can do for you. And I asked Andy, you know, Bo had this role last year where he was a spark for this offense at times. But do you see that growing? Do you see that developing, into next season? And he didn't specifically talk about Bo, but I thought his answer spoke volumes. And I'll just read it to you because it is a really good quote. He said, one of the objectives that we have this spring as a staff is to really understand what the players' capabilities and limitations are and being able to build around them. Any player that can help us win games on our offense, we will find a way to utilize. If we've got 8 O-linemen that are going to help us win a game, we'll put them out there at the same time. If we got 8 running backs, we'll find a way to put them on the field. We can't do that because it's illegal, but you know what I mean. We'll be as creative and as unique as necessary to utilize our players. And Bob, like that sound like in a vacuum that might just sound like coach speak, but when you compare that and juxtapose that to what he's done in his career so far, like he's just not blowing smoke. Like I really think that, you know, if he sees that Bo Prabhula can help this team and help this offense and not just in like fun little quirky things or him coming in as the mop-up duty kind of deal, like if Andy Kotelnicki thinks that Bo Prabhula can help Penn State, you know, beat Ohio State and beat Washington and USC, like in these big games, he's going to use them. And I know that, you know, Drew Aller is the guy, and he talked about Drew too. I've got a story coming out on that over the weekend, but some interesting comments just on Drew's mentality, and he's really impressed with how, you know, he is so focused on improving every day and dealing with the pressure really well. So Drew's going to be the guy, but I do think there's a really intriguing spot for Bo Prabhula in this offense. And I know you're looking forward to seeing it just as well as I am and the Penn State fans as well.
Yeah. Johnny, before I know at the very start of Andy's press conference, not informal press conference after practice on Tuesday before I kind of jetted away to talk to some players. I know you were there for the whole thing. I wanted to ask you about one thing I thought he said. It was refreshing to hear him say it. I know he is he's on the practice field, and I think in life he's an extrovert. I think he's a people person, and I think he seems like a guy that if he sees something he likes or doesn't like, he's going to let you know, right? And I think that's really important. I don't know if I really ever saw that in 2021, 2022, but that could have just been me. But he talked about how much he enjoyed teaching football and teaching these guys what he wants to do. And at one point, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, you know, this is the time of year, especially where you're kind of the players are going to fail, right? They're going to fail at something they do, but that's, to me, he kind of said that's kind of a good sign because he feels like they're not going to get better unless they make a couple of mistakes along the way. And he's eager to kind of correct them and maybe get them up to speed. I don't remember ever really hearing that, I guess, the last couple of years, maybe even dating back to Joe Moorhead for whatever reason. But for him to say that, I kind of believe that, right? And I do think that I haven't really heard him, an offensive coordinator, say, look, I'm kind of a teacher first, and if those guys fail, that's actually kind of a good thing at this time of year.
Yeah, definitely. Like, he's an open guy. You call it, like, extrovert. Like, I would agree with that. Now, like I mentioned in my little Bo Prabula talk there, like, I asked about Bo specifically, and he did not tell me, like, yeah, Bo is going to do X, Y, Z. So he's still got that coach in him, right, where he's not going to give it away. He's not going to, you know, tell you all his plans and you know, make the story you're writing a hell of a lot easier. But at the same time, he is an open dude, and you can tell that. Again, referencing what he said about Drew Aller and talking about when he was asked about Drew, Drew's first couple weeks in spring camp, how he's doing and everything, like, he went to the mentality side of it. He went to the in the lash building side of it in terms of his approach and everything, right? Like I mentioned, getting better and being so focused on looking in the mirror and knowing what you're doing good and bad and correcting the latter. And one thing that stood out to me too, Bob, I think it might've been in that same answer. Maybe it was a question later, but you know, when Andy was talking about the offense and installing the offense and everything, when he's talking to the offensive players early on, when he was first hired, he was asking them, like, what do you think this offense needs to be? Like, what do you want to get out of this offense? You know, and the players rattle off a bunch of different adjectives like explosive, confident, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I really think that matters when you're an offensive coordinator and you have that relationship with your players, with your quarterback specifically. It's really important. But when you get the feedback and you feel, you know, the room and know what they feel like they need to do, I think it helps your job coming in to accomplish it. And I really think he's going to do a good job as the offensive coordinator. I would be surprised if Penn State's offense wasn't, you know, in the bigger games too, just better than it was last year. Honestly, more pleasing to watch because, you know, last year was basically let's get it to third and short and pray. I shouldn't say pray, because when you have Nick Singleton and Katron Allen and, you know, an older offensive line, like, you know, it's pretty good. But at the same time, like, they were uninspired in the biggest moments last year. And I think Andy is going to flip that switch.
Yeah. Before we talk a little, just at the a little bit about the pro day effort, because it was a pretty good pro day for some Penn State players. Andy Kotelnicki, former played offensive line center in college. James was asked about the offensive line. They got to replace three starters, the two tackles in the center. But it's pretty clear. I think he's mentioned this player's name a couple of times now. JB Nelson, and kind of what he means to this offensive line. And, you know, before the 2022 season, I didn't, you know, James mentioned this name and I knew he was a JUCO, and I didn't really know. So, you know, it's not always, you just don't always know with him. He's mentioned some offensive linemen before, Johnny, that it's just kind of been, he didn't want to leave anyone out. But, you know, JB Nelson did start some games at left guard last year. He dealt with an injury. I think he suffered in the Northwestern game. They do have other guards they like, but for a guy that I think is like 6'3 or 6'5, 320, with Drew Shelton sidelined and some questions at right tackle since they're replacing both tackles, James came through to me loud and clear that Nelson is a guy I think they wouldn't hesitate to use in multiple positions, maybe other than center, and they feel like he could go in and do the job. So I don't know if I just think of him as a guard anymore, and I do think that if he continues to develop and if he gets more reps and some other guys step forward and maybe some young players don't step forward, he could be a guy that they could move him around if there's an injury. But I mean, he's worked at left tackle. I think he could probably play right tackle, both guards. He might be one of the more valuable offensive linemen on this team, and maybe one of the more valuable players on this team.
Yeah, I agree. And Bob, this is the time to do it, right? Like, and the Drew Shelton injury, even if that wasn't a thing, I think you would still see JB Nelson working at tackle, because You know, spring camp is the time to get these reps, especially like you mentioned, you lose your two tackles. You lose Olu Fashanu at left tackle. You lose Caden Wallace, who had his best season in Penn State uniform last year. Both those guys off to the NFL, so you have to replace those. Would be surprised if it's not Drew Shelton at left tackle. He's out for spring camp, but I think they've seen enough from him. Starting five games as a true freshman in 2022, playing in every game last year as a swing tackle. I think they like what Drew Shelton brings to the table, and he should be the left tackle. Now, at right tackle, you know, we talked about the candidates there, you know, previewing spring ball and everything, right? You're looking at Nolan Rucci, the Wisconsin transfer. You're looking at Anthony Donko, who played extensively in the Peach Bowl and I thought played pretty well, and I know you agree. Javen Williams, you know, another guy from the 2023 recruiting class who was a five-star. But look, sometimes transfers don't work out. Sometimes younger guys aren't ready for the moment, even when they're redshirt freshmen or sophomores. And I think it's valuable to get JB Nelson these reps right now, because on the inside, you've got Sal Wormley pretty much like entrenched at right guard. I mean, he decided to come back. He's played there seemingly forever. And then at left guard, you could have, if you had JB at tackle, you could have Vengayon inside. And I'm sure, you know, Phil Troutwine wouldn't bat an eye if that was your starting offensive lineman. You know, if that was your starting five, if you had Shelton, Ion, Nick Dawkins at center, Wormley at right guard, and if it was JB Nelson at right tackle, like I think Phil Troutwine would run that out if he had to, or if he felt like that was obviously the best grouping. So we'll see. But I like that JB's working at tackle right now. Mine as well, right?
Yeah, and to put him at left tackle, you got to think if the guy's got the physicality and the athleticism that James talked about to play left tackle, he can play right tackle too, because you typically the best pass rusher, you know, it's not always the case, but the left tackle spot is probably even a little bit more important than the right tackle spot. So yeah, he's a guy, I think if he stays healthy, I think that Andy and James and Phil will lean on him to start somewhere, number one. But if there's any kind of injury, I think what he can do really, there's a comfort level with him, and maybe he's kind of like a security blanket, because they do know they can move him and they have other options, inside. Johnny, let's hear on the Blue-White Breakdown. There's a couple things I want to get to with you at the very end. We're not getting off this podcast until you give me some NCAA tournament knowledge, specific knowledge, obviously the Final Four, but is there a game the first 2 days? I don't care when this runs. It's for me. Is there a game the first 2 days, whether it's at 11 o'clock at night on Friday or it's, you know, 3 o'clock? This is Thursday, 3 o'clock Thursday afternoon. At least I'll know. The people might not know. Is there a game you love? But as far as pro day, to see that many Penn State kids up there work out after all 10 were invited to the combine, then we get to see Keaton Ellis, Trey Potts, Alex Felkins. But I guess what I would, the thing that two things jumped out to me is, you know, as everyone talks about Penn State's tight ends, and they should, and they've played well at Penn State during James Franklin's time, and they played, you know, at a high level in the NFL. But I always knew Theo Johnson was a really good athlete. You could see it. But, you know, if you look at what he's done this offseason, like I'm pretty comfortable saying this. There's never been a better athlete at the tight end position, especially when it comes to maybe the pass catching end of it, than Theo. I mean, now I know there is field speed and I know there is testing speed, but he's just destroyed every workout, whether it's the combine, whether it was pro day, whether it was, you know, the Senior Bowl. He's just destroyed everything in its path. It's going to be a high draft pick, but it's not only him, Johnny, but to watch Chop Robinson move up at the pro day and, you know, at the combine. I mean, those in the history of Penn State football, I mean, there have been better players. There have been. But athletically, those guys, to see them up close, how they move, it's really just amazing to see where football has gone and how athletic the sport has become. And I know you talked to Chop. But I wanted to get your reaction to maybe just what you saw, but also what Chop had to say, not only about what he could do at the NFL, but what he thinks of the defensive end room in 2024.
Yeah, Bob. No, it was interesting talking to Chop. You mentioned the way he moves and the way he moved to Pro Day. He didn't have to run the 40-yard dash at Pro Day. He did not run the 40-yard dash.
He never wants to run one again, Johnny. Never.
No, that you know, the what he did out in Indy, I think it was a 4.48, right? Yeah, I think he's good on 40-yard dashes the rest of his life. So, yeah, Chop Robinson believes that he's a first-round pick. You know, he said he's got the best get-off in the draft, you know, in terms of the explosive first step, the best bend. And when you flip on the tape and when he's at his best, it's hard to argue with that. there's going to be some teams that, you know, maybe he just doesn't fit for what they want to do. And so, you know, that's why he's not in the top 15 conversation. But I would expect Chop to go in the first round. I think it's like too hard to, you know, deny the athletic ability that he has and what he provides as a pass rusher. And Theo Johnson, like, I mean, he's going to be a second round guy now, right? Like that's where it's pointing to, because you've got Brock Bowers, you know, who could be a top 10 pick, the tight end from Georgia. And then, I mean, you look at Jatavion Sanders from Texas, but I mean, Theo Johnson has just destroyed the pre-draft process from the, you know, the All-Star game to, you know, the Senior Bowl to what he did in Indianapolis and what he showed just in pass catching and everything at Pro Day. I mean, he has had a phenomenal pre-draft process, and I love what he's been doing so far. And so, yeah, I mean, this is a great group, and you have to give credit to, first and foremost, the players themselves, because, you know, they come in, you know, in Chop's case, he transfers in from Maryland. He was a five-star guy out of high school, but, you know, Theo comes in, like all these guys, Olu Fashanu comes in as a, you know, as a four-star, but again, it's on them to put in the work over the years at Penn State to get to this point. And so for that, for all of them, you know, these last 3 months have been a culmination of years of work, you know, through high school and college. So you want to give them their flowers, give them credit for what they've done to this point. You got to also give credit to Penn State strength and conditioning staff. Chuck Losey and his guys have continued what Dwight Gault and his guys did, you know, in the earlier years, you know, under James Franklin. And so I just think this staff, these players, the way they recruit, it's just really indicative of what kind of program Penn State's running right now, that they have one, this many guys in the NFL, but also guys who are really lighting up the pre-draft process. I'm excited to see, excited for Theo and Chop and all those guys to see where they, you know, ultimately end up when the draft starts on April 25th, Bob.
Yeah, Johnny. And just to follow up, Chop's got no issues with Abdul Carter moving to defensive end and what he kind of sees from Denai as well. There's some veteran defensive ends in that room. There's a young defensive end, Jameel Lyons, who he was mentioned. I think it was Sal Wormley mentioned him when asked about who's kind of stood out. I mean, there's a lot of buzz, obviously, for about him, but the defensive end room as a whole, right? They're going to replace very likely a first round pick, and I think if Theo's going in the second round, I'm pretty sure Adis is going to go in the second round too. You're replacing two freaks, and they're like, yeah, they're going to be really good again in the fall. So I think that says a lot about what you just touched on, whether it's the strength and conditioning, James's recruiting, their commitment. But just like they do at tight end now and defensive end and corner, though, I mean, the players will be missed, but the players in the system ready to replace them are as good, or some of them could be better. And that's just kind of, it's kind of cool to watch a player go from reserve to elite player in a very short time here at Penn State, but it's going to happen a lot moving forward.
Yeah, one quick note, because I know you tossed in the, you know, you were talking to Chop, you know, what did he say about the DNs? And I didn't touch on that in my little ramble there. got lost in the sauce a bit, I guess. But no, so what Chop said about Abdul, he said that once he kind of gets everything down in terms of like the technique and, you know, kind of the smaller things, the little details as players and coaches like to reference, that he will be quote unquote unstoppable. And like I can see it. I can see it. And, you know, so you pair Abdul with Denaiden and Sutton, who all those guys who are talking to Adisa and Chop and even Curtis Jacobs talking about some of these guys, like they all expect big things from Abdul and Denaiden and Sutton and Jameel Lyons and Zariah Fisher and this group of DNs that Deion Barnes has to work with for the 2024 season. So it's difficult, you know, losing a Chop and an Adisa at the same time. Like I feel like people almost sleep on the production that Adisa had in his time at Penn State. I mean, I think it was 27 tackles for loss in 26 games over the last two seasons. Like he was always around the ball. Like he really made himself some money last season. And also in the pre-draft process, another guy who's really done well for himself, especially coming off that injury that he missed the 2021 season. So yeah, I just think it's difficult for any team to replace two guys like that. But Penn State is in as good of a situation and position as possible to do that. And really intrigued to see, you know, what we see from Abdul at defensive end as spring camp rolls around, as all the training camp rolls around, and then eventually the season, Bob. Morgantown, West Virginia cannot come soon enough.
This is the Blue-White Breakdown.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, it's the Blue-White Breakdown talking about Penn State football, but it's also, as we record this, one of the great weekends, one of the great sporting weekends. I think most people would agree. Top three sporting weekend starting on Thursday through Sunday. I mean, it's the NCAA tournament's going to go on for a couple of weeks, but there are a lot of games starting. We're recording this early Thursday morning. This is going to be a little bit dated, but I'm just super excited for this. Johnny, is there anything advice you can give me in the first set of the 32 games or whatever, however many there's going to be played Thursday and Friday? Is there anyone you have your eye on, kind of licking your chops? And big picture, is it going to be chalky or is there going to be a surprise at the end of the line?
Yeah, so look, I'll start with like the final four picks because – this is something that any of my buddies know, anyone who knows, anyone who's played fantasy football with me knows that I am like the tinkerer of all tinkerers when it comes to lineups, brackets. If any listeners have ever seen The League and, you know, Rodney Ruxton, how much he tinkers, like that is me when it comes to my fantasy lineups and certainly when it comes to my March Madness bracket. So when the bracket came out Sunday night, I filled out like an initial just gut bracket. And then over the next like 2.5 days, I listened to like just the entire drive up to State College, Bob, and back was just March Madness podcasts, like, you know, advanced stats, all that crap, right? And I was changing my bracket, changing the champion. I have like reverted back to my gut bracket. And so it could be wrong. It probably will be. Everyone's bracket's always wrong. But so my final four is I've got UConn beating Arizona, and then I've got Kentucky beating Creighton, and then UConn beating Kentucky in the championship game. Kentucky honestly could flame out in the second round, and it wouldn't surprise me. But their talent, what they have at guard, is just like Reed Shepard, you know, Mitchell, like all those guys are just, I think, too good to be denied at least a spot in the Elite Eight. And that's actually what I've got a future on, Bob, if you're looking for some value. I like Kentucky to reach the Elite Eight. In terms of the first round, what I'm looking at, I like BYU. I think they're minus 9.5. against Duquesne. And the story of Duquesne is great. Like, Keith Dambrot, their head coach, is retiring. You know, they get in by winning the A-10 tournament. And obviously from Pittsburgh, I spent some time actually covering Duquesne a little bit when I was at the Post-Gazette. Really cool arena. If anyone is like in town in Pittsburgh in like February and you need something to do on a Tuesday night and you want to watch some college hoops, Duquesne is a nice little arena there. I like it. But I don't like them against BYU. I think BYU, you know, they would have been a 5 seed if religiously they could play on Sundays. And so they were moved to a 6 seed. And I like BYU to go all the way to the Elite Eight. And so I really like them first round against Duquesne. A couple of other shouts. The over in the Charleston-Alabama game. Neither team plays defense at all. Neither team cares.
I have that one circled too. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are some shouts. What about you?
Well, just real quick, just to show you that I don't forget when it comes to some things. Pittsburgh hosting some games this weekend. You lived in Pittsburgh. It was Mario's, correct? Mario's was the place. Was that one of your go-to places to post up or no?
Yes. Yeah. It's not really like.
So which one is it again?
I went to the one in Shadyside because it was like a block away from me. It's not like divey though. I know you love dive bars. They're not really divey. They're just like, I mean, it's wood, like kind of wood paneling and everything. It's a good sports bar. It's a good sports bar.
All right. I'm terrible at this. Also, I think for the list, they're going to be mad because I think that BYU Duquesne game is like at Thursday at like 2 o'clock, I think. But your point, though, is valid about BYU going a long way in this tournament. That's what I want our listeners and viewers to focus on when you give out this advice. Not necessarily the first game, but a talented team that is in a bracket that can go a long way. Johnny, I am I'm usually pretty terrible at this. I'm going to go this far, though. I don't know if there's going to be a 1 seed that makes it to the Final Four. How about that?
Okay.
I have a little bit of a feeling about Baylor. I think that they're in a region that they can win. North Carolina and Arizona are supremely talented, but those guys in the tournament, they give me a little pause. I know it's not going to be easy. I like Baylor a little. The team that I'm curious the most about, and I've seen this happen before in tournaments, is, you know, Marquette has had to shadow UConn all season, kind of be under their thumb. But I think they played twice. UConn blew them out of the gym in the game, I think, at UConn. It was a little bit closer when they played at Marquette. I think Marquette's healthy again, and I think they're on the opposite side of the bracket, I think, as UConn. And that is a team, I think, love the coach, Shaka, right? It is Shaka Tony, I think. But yeah. Anyway.
Shaka Smart. Shaka Tony is...
That's right. Shaka Tony. Shaka Smart. Sorry. Thank God you're on this podcast with me. Apologies. Shaka Smart. Shaka Smart, if you're listening to this podcast, you shouldn't be. But if you are, I was thinking of you the whole time. Shaka Tony, if you're listening to this podcast, I think you're a bit of a gambler. Am I right, Johnny? But good luck to you in the tournament.
I wasn't going to say it.
It's out there. It's public knowledge.
I know.
It's out there, Johnny. It's fair game. Anyway, Shaka Smart, I think, has a history of coaching pretty well in the tournament. I could see them making a very deep run, getting away from UConn. I think that's a talented team. And I mean, I think they can pretty much play with just about anyone else in the tournament. And they've played UConn tough before. I'm anti 1 seeds. I'm tired of the chalk. So maybe that from my perspective, I am flawed. But I'm rooting for a lot of good games, and I think the Final Four could still be great if none of the ones that make through. Because I think the top 12 teams in this tournament are fairly close. But yes, UConn will be tough. But that's my take. So.
No, that's fair. But I mean, look, like Auburn, I believe, is number 4 in KenPom. Yeah, Auburn's 4 and, you know, 4th in KenPom, and they're a 4 seed. And that matchup with UConn potentially in the Sweet 16, I've wrestled with it. Among my many tinkering, I've had like Auburn going to the finals. Like it's been weighing heavy. But one more thing, because I know I gave out like the BYU pick and people maybe listening to it after the fact. And so one thing just to look ahead to, and I know that the Charleston, Alabama game, that over, that will be Friday night. One more, though. I like the winner of Michigan State, Mississippi State to beat UNC in the second round. I do. And it was like, that was a part of the gut bracket that stayed throughout the entire time. It's something I feel really good about. UNC, you know, they didn't make the tournament last year, obviously made the national title the year before and lost. But yeah, I just think, I don't think going through Baycott is sustainable. And if, you know, RJ Davis is obviously very talented, but can be streaky. So I like the talent. I like the demeanor and the kind of just hard-nosed attitude that Mississippi State brings, especially to the glass. And then Michigan State, you know, you can't, it sounds like such a cliche, but you can't count out Tom Izzo in March. And, you know, that was the one team that, along with Virginia, were the teams that people were like, why are they in the tournament? Like, you know, Michigan State has 14 losses. But I think their guard play, Walker and Hogard, like those guys, they can string together a couple of really good games and potentially knock off North Carolina in the second round.
Feels like a money line bet by you to me for sure, because you're going to get a good price. So good luck you and your handicapping. You know, in all facets, I will try to do the same. To all our listeners and viewers, good luck watching the tournament. If you're going to play, I know if you're not going to bet, I'm sure you're going to be in brackets. So I hope your brackets kind of hold up. And good luck also to Shaka Smart and Shaka Tony this tournament as well. Johnny, it's been great chatting with you. There'll be another availability, I think, next Tuesday. Hopefully we'll learn some more. Maybe get to talk to Tom Allen, see what he thinks about this defense. So productive podcast on a Thursday morning. Enjoy the weekend, everyone, and especially you, Johnny McGonigal.
You too, Bob.
This has been the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.